Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We're joined again by Dan Szymborski. He is a baseball analyst for ESPN. Dan, welcome back to Locked On Orioles.
Hey, Justin. Thanks for having me back.
The thing I want to ask you about a couple of things, but the first one is this. I, like most Orioles fans, I have been kind of distraught about the... I've been distraught about everything. But one thing in particular I've been distraught about has been the Chris Davis contract and the Chris Davis situation in general. And by that, by the Chris Davis situation, what I mean, of course, is that he has been, we know that he has this long contract that he's not even halfway through yet. He still has 4.5 years left on it. If you include this year's, half a season of 2018, it's actually more than half, I guess, but basically 4.5 years left. And he has reached the point where he is not even a replacement level player. I saw something somebody tweeted earlier today. It said, Chris Davis, over the last calendar year, he has a 189 batting average, 276 on base percentage, and 344 slugging percentage for the calendar year. And obviously, that's just atrocious. And there's no signs, if people, if you watch him, there's no signs that he's improving or figuring it out. There was this whole dust-up with Jim Palmer. So I guess the first question is, are you surprised that he has deteriorated as quickly as he has? I mean, I think everybody was expecting that this contract was going to come back to bite the Orioles in the butt, but I don't know that anybody expected him to be this bad by 2018. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this is a level of terrible that it was hard to expect him to be to just play this poorly. You look at 2016 and 2017, and that's kind of the normal kind of decline phase for a fairly one-dimensional slugger who you drastically overpaid. This year, of course, I mean, he has an OPS under 500, and we're a third of the way through the season. It's not like you can say that it's like an April thing. It's just an all year thing. He's on pace to be nearly 5 wins below replacement, which is a ridiculous number. I think it would be the lowest of all time. I don't think he's quite this bad. But there's really not a lot of things to look at. There's not a lot of optimism. There's no little hidden exit velocity that suggests that he has more power. It's not like his contact numbers are amazing or something, and they portend a great comeback. I think the Orioles are just kind of screwed here.
Right. So I put this question out on Twitter the other day. I kind of put it out casually. I wasn't really thinking it through very much, but I said, are we getting to the point where we have to consider Chris Davis in the conversation for the worst contract in baseball history? And I got a lot of response to that, Pujols and Carl Pavano and some people for Josh Hamilton. So a lot of good candidates out there. But one thing that kind of struck me was, A, it's kind of amazing. Everybody thinks that their team's worst contract is the worst contract ever. It's like whatever team they follow, whatever bad contracts they have, that's the one they gravitate towards. But the other thing is, I think people outside of Birdland haven't quite realized what we were just talking about how bad he's been. And I don't think people honestly realize how long this contract is either. So, I know you've done stuff with worst contracts. Do you think this is going to be one that's going to be in that conversation at the end of, 5 years? Or are we going to be talking about it as perhaps the worst contract in baseball history from a team's perspective?
It would be hard to make Chris Davis the worst contract in terms of working out, simply because we live in a world where the Ryan Howard contract already happened and the Phillies got below replacement performance for $125 million in past dollars. The Chris Davis contract, there's a lot of money, and people are definitely going to joke about how much is deferred. But unlike the Bobby Bonilla settlement, the Orioles didn't pay an obscene interest rate. So the present-day value is evaluated by the Players Union was more like $125 million at the time. So essentially, Howard sets kind of the baseline of how bad a contract can be. Now, in terms of what to expect, Zips right now, of the contracts that are currently in play, Zips projects it to be, of whatever's remaining, to be the third worst contract in baseball behind Pujols and behind Miguel Cabrera. So that's not a good place to be, because those worst contracts, you can at least say, hey, they were stars at the time. Chris Davis was a star very briefly.
Yeah, and I guess the thing that I think about with this contract too. And I know I keep going back to this, but it's just how much time is left on at this point and how bad he is right now. Because, like I said, he projects to be a -5 WAR for the year. Now, maybe he doesn't end up playing enough for that to happen. Maybe he rights the ship a little bit, but I mean, is there any way he even plays out this contract with the Orioles? I guess that's the other question. I mean, is there any way he really is an everyday? Certainly, I mean, is he even a player at all for the Orioles? Never mind an everyday player for the next 4 years. You know what I mean?
Well, one could say he's not even a player right now, and the Orioles are just pretending he isn't. Kind of like if I wear a Speedo to the beach, it doesn't make me a supermodel. God forbid that.
Thank God this is audio only podcast.
Yeah, this is audio only. I will not show pictures to buttress this point. But the thing about Chris Davis is this is year three of a 7-year contract. I cannot see him still being on the team in 2022. I can barely, if the Orioles are going to essentially eat the entire contract. There's little question about that. While they're rebuilding, they're probably just going to throw him out there and hope they can get some performance out of him. But it's really looking bleak right now because he's not just playing poorly. He's playing historically poorly. Now the length of the contract, it's going to, while it's better than paying it all in 2016 to 2022, it's going to remind people of that contract forever. And I know that Bobby Bonilla is the classic example. But my favorite long-term contract of this type is Bruce Sutter's. When Sutter signed with the Braves, they deferred a ton of money over 30 years. They still owe him something like $13 million, and he gets paid $9 million in like one last balloon payment in 2021. And of course, Sutter did not play well for the Braves, has been retired for 30 years.
Yeah, so it's... when you're talking about worst contracts, what you find is there's so many different ways of looking at it, I guess. You know, there really is. And of course, I got responses from people saying, you know, the worst contracts are the ones that screw the players because, you know, you shouldn't only look at it from the team perspective. And okay, I get that.
There is a point. But the thing is that we see the team perspective. We see a team struggling to put a team on the field. We don't see a player having less money than they would otherwise. We don't see Evan Longoria not having a larger house. So even if it's the same thing, I mean, we're talking about it from the team perspective. And it's a team perspective that we talk about wins and losses. It would be weird if we had a magazine of players who signed long-term contracts and showed their houses and said, his house could have been better. Oh, look at Chris Sale. He has a big house, but he could have a double size pool. At that point, when you're like doing that, it seems a little petty because you're not talking about wins and losses.
Right. Yeah. And again, that's, to me, there's a sort of a difference too with like people talk to, like somebody said, when I tweeted this out, somebody said, well, you know, Trout's, you know, years before he becomes a free agent or something, maybe. And I'm like, well, you know, that's a whole different thing. That's the economics of the game. That's not a bad decision being made by a player. You know, this we're talking about bad decisions being made by teams.
I don't really have I hope I don't come off as like having sympathy for the Orioles. They're getting bashed pretty badly for their contract. So
all right, well, shifting gears just a little bit, we know Chris Davis has no value at all. And one guy on the Orioles who does have a ton of value though is Manny Machado. And he is a guy who we know is a free agent at the end of the year, is going to be gone. So the question keeps coming up, are the Orioles going to trade him? Of course, you know, logic dictates that they should. This team is obviously out of contention for anything and have been for, you know, basically since the middle of April. And, Machado obviously has some value even for just half a season. You can get something back for him. What are your thoughts? Do you think the Orioles are going to trade him like they should, or do you think they're going to be stubborn like Peter Angelos has traditionally been? Are they going to ask for too much? What's your thought on whether Machado actually gets moved before the trade deadline?
Well, I don't have a lot of kind feelings towards the Orioles and how they're run. So there's a bit of bias that I have to kind of include ahead of time, that I'm more inclined to believe the Orioles are incompetent than that the Orioles are, you know, playing secret 11th dimensional chess. So to get that out of the way, I mean, I think in the end they will trade him because it's so crazy to not trade him. But what gets in the back of my mind is inside baseball, the Orioles have a reputation as a team being very difficult to deal with. And everybody who I've talked to says that they're asking for a lot for Manny Machado. And you should ask for a lot. But here's the problem the Orioles have. You look where the Dodgers were. They just lost Corey Seager. At the time, they were like 9 games out of first. If the Dodgers at that point aren't giving you a package worthy of Manny Machado, who would? Because I can't see any team being in a situation as obvious for a shortstop upgrade as the Dodgers were. And if they don't do it, again, who will? I don't see the magic package coming out. I see them almost panicking in July 31st, taking whatever the best package is left, and it being underwhelming. I can see the Orioles asking for pictures that are for pictures or prospects or batters that are closer to the majors rather than high upside. I still don't know if this team realizes that they are not a retooling away from competing. They're a Houston, Chicago, Atlanta, Philadelphia style tear down and rebuild away from competing, and it's going to be years. And that's where they are, whether they choose to acknowledge that or not.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think worries me and other Orioles people is if they do make a trade, it's going to be, like you said, something for a couple of guys that are maybe in the majors already or close to being ready with the idea, well, they'll fill in positions for us next year. And to me, it's like it makes no sense. They shouldn't be looking at anybody who's going to help them in 2019. They should be looking at guys who are going to help them in 2021 and beyond, right? I mean, like you said, this team is not doing anything for the foreseeable future. And the only way they're ever going to get good again is to think that way and to just accept that the next several seasons are going to be losing seasons and build towards that, you know, whatever you know, date they have in mind, whether it's, you know, 21 or 22, they should be building toward that. And I'm afraid they're not going to do that. And they're going to take, you know, kind of mediocre major leaguers in exchange for Machado.
Yeah, the joke I've been making is that the Orioles trade Manny Machado for Joe Panic.
Right.
He's not a bad player, but he's not the kind of player you trade for Machado. And I know that's like 98% joke, but there's like a 2% like horrified feeling like inside of that joke where I think, oh my God, what if it actually happens? So we'll see, but I'm not optimistic. I think the Orioles need a larger teardown than what they're probably doing with Machado, because the reality is that Machado is not the only player that needs to be traded. If they don't have a reasonable long-term contract with Jonathan Scope, he probably should look to be traded. He is a free agent after next season. I think that if you don't have Gausman or Dylan Bundy signed long-term soon, they're not that far from free agency either. Kevin Gausman is 2 years away from free agency. Now Bundy's a little farther. He's 3 years away, but I think that it's the point where you say, hey, you know, if we don't have these guys long term, we're not going to be a good team in 2 years. We're not going to be a good team in 3 years. If they're not long term, we're just wasting their time and our value. So I think that they really should be looking to trade anything of value that teams want from the organization. And I don't think that there's anybody who should be hands off. There's no prospect in the Orioles organization good enough to be hands off.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that I'm sure you've read the same things the rest of us have read about the just general dysfunction in the front office and the fact that it doesn't seem to be anybody in charge and, you know, nobody really is, you know, it's not clear who's actually got decision-making power and all that sort of stuff. What are your thoughts on, I mean, is Dan Duquette, we think Dan Duquette is definitely gone, right? There's no way Dan Duquette is back after this year.
Yeah, what Duquette, Duquette's gone. And really, you have Peter Angelos, you have Angelos' kids, you have Brady Anderson, you have Dan Duquette in there. Buck Showalter has a say. So it's a mess. It's like one of those historical tales of the Byzantine court and everybody in civil war with each other. It's hard to even say who's making what decision. It's hard to say how many of those parties actually understand the situation the Orioles are in. I think Duquette probably does. I haven't spoken with him about this or anything. But I have to think he's a better baseball guy than what we've seen from what the Orioles do.
Yeah, it seems like so many of my podcasts come back to this theme of you know, just general incompetence in the running of this team. And I just can't ever get past the fact that you talk about they don't see what's going on. How could they not see it? I mean, I agree with you that they don't see it, but I don't get how it's possible that, you know, anybody with any modicum of sense can look at how bad this team is right now and see that it's nowhere close to being a contender, but the people who are actually paid to make the decisions or the people who actually invest their own money in this don't see it. I don't get that at all.
Yeah, I remember when Dan Duquette made statements to the media a few weeks ago when he said that the team was evaluating where they stand. They were something like 9-27 at the time. If that's like, you know, you're using a chainsaw to cut some brush off your property and you cut off your arm and you're bleeding everywhere and you're sitting there evaluating, do I need to go to the hospital or should I get some Band-Aids? That's kind of where the Orioles are. And I think Duquette will probably be happier when he's out of the organization, because the thing is, even if these aren't his decisions, his name is on them. So whatever happens is the question is, do you share some ethical responsibility for that when names are made in your name that you just let happen for years? At some point he's owning these decisions. So we'll see.
Well, of course we know he tried to get out of town a few years ago and Peter Angelos wouldn't let him.
Poor guy.
I agree. I think Dan Duquette, I think he probably is in some ways unfairly evaluated for his time there, because there definitely have been some positives and there definitely been some indication early on, particularly. I think he did some good things. But yeah, I think it's probably best for him and for the organization for him to get out of Dodge. I just don't know what the future holds, because, again, these articles that we saw recently indicate that Brady Anderson isn't necessarily interested in a GM kind of role. But he does want to have some decision. Basically, he wants to do the fun parts of it, but not the hard parts of it.
Yeah, it's fun to make decisions when you don't bear responsibility for them. Kind of like how whenever a projection's bad, I tell people that the bad projections, those are Carson Cistulli's fault, not mine.
Right, exactly.
It's kind of funny because, you know, the one constant in all the Orioles GM havoc over the last, you know, 25 years, the one constant has been Peter Angelos. So at some point, it gets harder and harder to say that he doesn't bear the ultimate responsibility, because the Orioles have had a lot of different general managers with a lot of different viewpoints coming in, because Dan Duquette was more of a modern GM than some of the previous guys. I mean, you look at Sid Thrift, more of an old school guy, but the general organizational dysfunction stays the same. Even when the Orioles were good for a few years, there was still a lot of organizational dysfunction. As they started becoming good again, you didn't see the same kind of aggressive win now moves, except for a couple of trades. But the weird thing is that the Orioles could have had an even darker future, because if you recall, when Peter Angelos was bidding for the team from the Edward Bennett Williams estate, one of the runner ups in the Orioles building was a little known art dealer from New York named Jeff Loria. So it could have been worse.
So let me ask you this one final thing, and this may be the hardest question I ask you. All right, we've talked about a lot of horrible things for the Orioles and for Orioles fans. Give me one thing that 2018 Orioles fans should be excited about or happy about.
Kevin Gausman has shown signs of being good. I mean, he's had stretches where he's been really good this year.
Right, right.
And then occasionally I watch a start and then he's terrible. So I try not to watch his starts as a policy, because I'm not normally someone who believes in superstitions, but I watched the first start against the Twins in the third game of the season. He was terrible. I said, you know, every time I'm positive about him, something bad happens. So I'm just not going to watch any starts. And then he rattled off something like six or seven consecutive quality starts. I didn't watch any of them. I kept them off. I turned it on for that game in Boston and he pitched poorly. And I briefly had him on against the Rays a few days ago. So three of his worst starts, I think his three worst starts are the three that I watched. So I'm going to try to make sure to avoid him in the future. But I like Gausman. He's always had that potential. I feel like a team like the Astros or the Cubs could probably figure out what to do with him a little better and could hone him a little better. I don't know if the Orioles are really a modern front office coaching staff in that sense. But he's him and Bundy being healthy. There's not a lot of sources of optimism, but I'll say those are at least interesting to watch.
All right, so we know how this is going to end, that Kevin Gausman is going to be traded, and it's going to be the next Jake Arrieta winning a Cy Young somewhere else. So
I was half joking. I said that leaving the Orioles seems to be like a moment of catharsis for pitchers. That's when they hit rock bottom, when they're pitching for the Orioles, because Jeremy Hellickson now is pitching really well for the Nationals. He has a ERA under 2.5 in 8 games he's pitched for the Nationals. And you see so many Oriole pitchers leave, and if they stay healthy, have these career turnarounds. Bud Norris is literally an ace reliever. Even like guys like WADA had moments of value once they left the Orioles. So I don't know what's going on. I don't know, maybe old Bay's bad for pitching or something. I would hope not, but who knows?
Well, I think, unfortunately, Occam's razor says we have to assume that the reason the Orioles pitchers are bad are for the same reason that everything else in the organization is bad, and the same reason that they don't do international signings, and the same reason that they don't realize they're in rebuild mode and all that, because it starts at the top as far as I can tell. But anyway, on that note, I'll let you go, Dan. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Hopefully next time I'll be more positive.
Well, I've had trouble having positive episodes of this podcast. Not surprisingly, it's been a struggle to find anything that's not, you know, the only positive episodes I have are when I'm looking at the farm system or looking at some of the prospects and, you know, maybe looking at the future a little bit. But certainly anything focused on the current Orioles, it's hard to be optimistic about it.
Well, Godspeed, Justin.
All right. Thanks, Dan.